Hey y'all, it's me, Melissa, and welcome to Craps, a day in the life with a woman with CRPS. Today we have our special guest. Thank you for coming back, Richard. And we have a lot of stuff to discuss today that I know a lot of CRPS warriors have definitely been gone through. So, Richard, let's go for it.
Hello, Miss Bliss. It's nice to see you again.
You too.
It's too bad I can't go out partying somewhere instead of doing this.
Yeah. Yes, I'm exhausted today.
I'm sorry. I'll try to. I don't feel tired. I'm just kind of got an issue from a thing called a pneumothorax, which is a kind of a hole in your lining in your lung, which I've had before. So my name's Richard. I'm Backyard Birder on Instagram. Please follow me and Melissa. All we're trying to do is help every CRPS warrior and not anyone with a chronic disease. No other motive whatsoever, but to, you know, to make people better in the future. That's all we're doing.
That's right.
Let me just give you a little background about me. I'm 7 years old. I have three comorbidities: CRPS, prostate cancer, and interstitial lung disease. And I also had major reconstructive spine surgery, which didn't work out too well. And I know Melissa has had a cancer issue also, so she's well versed, like I am, in seeing doctors. That's for sure.
Yes. So.
What I wanted to start out with today is kind of a macro look at our country's medical system and kind of work from that down to a micro concept of it. And the medical system and first of all, the life expectancy in the U.S. has dropped for the third straight year from 2020 to 2023. From 77.4 down to 75.9. And people can say there's a lot of reasons for that. It's our diet, anxiety, it's the quality of life. It's a lot of reasons. And if you can imagine this, we used to have the highest life expectancy in the developed world, and now we're 16th in the developed world. And if you can imagine, Cuba, Lebanon, and Chechnya have higher life expectancies than U.S. does now.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it kind of goes to the, you know, kind of what's happening in this country just in general. Now, the NIH, which is the National Institute of Health, which is a relatively benign, fair government agency, which does publish relative research studies, which are fairly accurate. And the only time I look at a research study and I think it might be accurate is from an NIH study. I would hardly recommend just looking at NIH studies, because any other study you find that's done by a company that develops drugs or medical devices is going to be stilted towards the device that they're making. So, interestingly enough, the NIH has stated that the United States is great at making innovation, but somehow it never finds its way to the general public. And, you know, how do you explain that? And in my estimation, a lot of it is the medical profession is culpable in a lot of ways, and I'll explain a little more in detail about that now. Since 1990, the U.S. population has increased from 248 million to 339 million, which is a 91 million increase of 36% in, 23 years.
Wow.
Now doctors in this country have increased only 8% over that time. And a lot of people think it has to do with the AMA, but the AMA has nothing to do with the amount of doctors that are in this country. And the medical schools in the last 8 years or 12 years have increased the amount of people on their schools by 5,200, which is a 12% increase, which of course doesn't come close to matching the increase in population. Yeah. But the residency of doctors, which is what you need, has only increased 3% because it's funded by the CMS, which is a governmental agency that oversees the funding of residency programs in hospitals and universities. Now, that has caused a bottleneck from the medical schools to the residencies, which is why there's such a shortage of doctors. Now, what's one of the reasons, in my estimation, why there's such a shortage of doctors? And one of the reasons is the healthcare that our elected officials get. The congressmen, the senators, all get, what I consider to be concierge medical care, which I'll explain in a minute. And they get same day medical care. It's absolutely free. They get to see the same doctors. And the way our country is going, and imagine what that's like for you as a chronic illness patient, or me as a chronic illness patient, or me. We have to wait many times, months and months, to see a qualified specialist, or even to see any doctor that we think might be somewhat competent in what we need.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've come across that many times, Melissa.
Oh yeah, many times.
So what can be done, you please excuse me. I suffer from many of the same things that everybody else does, and that's brain fog and inability to think of what I'm trying to think of the most in many cases, and that is something that a lot of people can understand. So I apologize for not being able to pull out of my mind what I'm trying to pull out at the moment. Okay. The AMA does contribute to the shortage of doctors in one way, and that's because they want to limit the amount of doctors, and they lobby for that in Congress. So, and what they keep saying, their argument for it is, we don't want the same thing to happen to doctors that happen to lawyers, and that's unemployed lawyers. Well, I kind of resent that because I'm an unemployed lawyer and CPA, and I was trained as a tax lawyer, and I was good at it, and that's why I had a job.
Yeah.
So what bothers me is there's such a shortage of doctors that there's no accountability for them. In other words, if you're no good at what you do generally in business or in my trading business, which I'll explain later what I actually became, or as a CPA or a lawyer, you get cut. Nobody wants to hire you. You get cut. Doctors don't get cut. If they don't get cut because there's too few of them, and they have a good lobby in Congress. And unfortunately, if you're not good at what you do, you should have accountability, and you should have something where if you don't do a good job, you should make less money, or you should not have a job.
Exactly.
But that's not the way it works. Also, there's something in medicine that's coming at a fast rate, and it's called concierge medicine, and it's a huge trend right now. And let me just give you a little anecdotal. Now, this is from talking to a lot of CRPS and other chronic patients that live in Europe and other places, and in this country also. They have to wait frequently 2 years to see a specialist. And all the health care, quote, is free. Well, that's not free, because you're going to be suffering and you're going to die, and you're never going to get to see a qualified person, because the doctors that are making more money are the ones that are in the concierge medicine practice. And if I'm not making any sense, please stop me and I can explain a little bit.
No, you're doing great.
And this does all relate. It does all relate to what we go through to see a doctor and how long we have to wait and whether the doctor does us any good and all the rest. Because if they had more accountability, they would be more susceptible to listening to us and having more empathy and sympathy for helping us.
Yes.
But when they get paid, regardless whether they do a good job or not, they're not likely to do a good job.
Exactly.
And I still don't pay them when I leave. They always tell me about what? I'm sorry.
I said, oh, I still pay them when I leave my appointment, even though they didn't help me in any way, you know? So, yes. They definitely get paid.
Yeah, and you get paid whether they even try to do a good job. That's the really sorry thing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at my notes here. In 2018, let me explain concierge medicine. It's retainer medicine. So in other words, you pay a fee per year to see a doctor, which they love because then they can reduce their exposure to insurance companies, and they're going to get a bigger percentage of what they get paid then. And in 2018, there were 900 practices that were dedicated to concierge medicine. Now there's 2,500 in 2023, and in 2040, it's estimated that there'll be 5,000 or 6,000 practices that will be dedicated to concierge medicine. And that's a bad thing for the general public because, number one, the price is going to go up per year. It goes anywhere from $1,800 a year to $10,000 a year to join one of these practices. And doctors limit their patients, which is better for them. They do less work. And they'll probably do a better job because they get paid more and they don't have to see as many patients.
Yeah,
and it's great, and the term for it now is wealth care, not health care, and that makes sense, you know, and that's what's going on in Europe, and that's what the trend is, and that's what the trend is going to continue to be. They call it boutique medicine, retainer medicine, and as you well know, insurance companies will definitely find a way to still get paid in some way from this also. They're not going to get cut out. Health insurance companies are not going to get cut out of this.
No. Definitely
so
not.
That's coming, and that's not a good thing for us. So what can be done to help this? Well, the obvious thing is to increase the funding for hospitals from the CMS. And instead of pissing away money on the war in Ukraine, which is going to end, you know, wars. We have 720 military bases around the world. 720. I mean, we are the evil empire reincarnated. We are ancient Rome all over again. We don't need all those. What we need is jobs for people, food for people, and medical care and child support. That's what people want.
Yeah.
They don't want governments to spend money on war. Nobody wants, except for the industrial military complex. And by the way, I'll just name this Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be running on a platform of dissolving the U.S. empire as we have it. You know, getting rid of all the military bases. And I'm not espousing that. I'm apolitical. I hate all politicians equally, so I want to put that out there. And it's a great concept, and if he actually could do it, it would be great. But if anybody actually thinks he can get rid of the the industrial military complex, then whatever you're smoking isn't helping very much. That's all I can say. So, so that's one of the macro issues right there. There needs to be more money that's allocated towards more medical schools, and there has to be a little kindness and empathy training towards doctors so that the concept of do no harm is actually in place. And more though, do no harm, it should be, hey, I'm going to do a little extra work to try and help my patients.
Yes. Yes.
And what has to happen for that, there has to be more doctors. Now, are there going to be maybe more doctors that aren't qualified, yes, but there's doctors that aren't qualified now. There's plenty of them. I've seen more doctors because of all the things I have than you can imagine.
Yes.
Okay. All right, what's next here? A national health care program is the exact worst idea because people think it's a good idea, but in some of the countries it works because the tax rates are so high, like in Sweden. But yeah. It won't work here, so we don't want national health care. What we want is more doctors funded by the government so that people have a better than even chance of seeing a specialist.
Yes.
In the necessary time that it can take to help people.
That'd be nice if we could, you know, be able to see the doctors that we need, and those doctors, like you said, went through that class so that they would, you know, listen. That's the most important thing. Those doctors need to listen to us. You know, don't go off the rail, you know, and they just talk whatever they want to talk about, or say, oh, I'm going to fix this, and that's not even what you're in there for. You want this to be solved, and yes, they need to take those classes, definitely. And it'd be nice to have.
Yes. And they use, they have, especially pain doctors, you know, I've seen plenty of pain doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And pain doctors have their own little bag of tricks, and that's all they have. And if what they do immediately is they try to get you to sign up for their nerve blocks or whatever it is that they do, or if it's a drug thing, they're going to have you prescribe for gabapentin, whatever
mm-hmm.
drug is what they're a specialist in. And
yeah,
I know you can answer just as I do that 90% of the time drugs don't work for neurological pain that we have. It just doesn't work.
It's like some of them, it can like I do. I take some medication where it softens it a little bit, but I am in pain constantly, no matter what. If I'm taking medication or my stimulator is on and beaten, it does not matter. I am still in pain. And like today, I am physically, my body is exhausted and it hurts. Like you just can't explain it. And I've taken my medication. Everything's supposed to be, it's just not. It's not affecting it at all today. It is medication. I mean, and it's different for every CRPS patient. It really is.
Yes, and I don't take a lot of medication other than for sleep. And that's one thing I'd like to point out, that if you don't sleep with a disease like this, you're going to get 10 times the anxiety and you're going to want to kill yourself a lot faster. And I don't care who you are, but if you have CRPS and it's real, anybody that has it has considered assisted death at some point. I don't mean you're going to act on it, but you considered it because you wonder what the marginal utility is in living with. I have constant pain every day, and it's mm-hmm. very intense starting mid-afternoon, and then about 9 o'clock, it's so intense that if I had a chainsaw, I'd cut my leg off at the time. It's also spread to my right knee and my right foot, and also my lumbar spine too, which is where I had the surgery from.
Yes.
So, and I want to talk about doctors. This was a little micro thing, but and I want to point out that people think that I think all doctors are bad. I do not think that all doctors are bad. I have a terrific pulmonologist. His name is Charles Quick. I live in Indianapolis. He's 70 years old. Unfortunately, he's going to be retiring at the end of the year. But he's a great guy. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't have a huge ego. When the COVID thing hit, it affected many people that had lung problems, of course. And I have interstitial lung disease, which is scarring of the lungs, which is a disease that makes it hard to breathe and eventually will kill you over time. But it's kind of a slow process, kind of like CRPS. Yeah. And not as bad either, for that matter. But he's one of the few doctors I knew that when the COVID crisis hit, he still went to see his patients in the hospital. And I don't know too many doctors that did that.
Yeah.
No, and as a result, he got a bad case of COVID. And I respect him tremendously. And when I saw the first pulmonologist, I'll make this quick. This guy wanted me to start on a massive dose of antibiotics. Well, the life expectancy of somebody with interstitial lung disease that's serious is about 3 to 5 years, and that was diagnosed to me 10 years ago. And my swimming regimen and the fact that I take the inhaler religiously has stopped that. And this guy, if you take a massive dose of antibiotics every day, the odds are you're going to get sepsis, and that's blood poisoning, and you're going to die from that. So luckily, I wasn't buying that, what the doctor said to me, so I saw this other guy, and he steered me away from that. And I want to one more shout out to another doctor. I have a urologist named Dr. Cook, who's also IU Medicine, who also treats my prostate cancer, which I have. And yeah. I found him on a prostate cancer site. Michael Cook is his name, K-O-C-H. And he's a terrific guy. He didn't, his practice was full, but he took me because he knew about CRPS. And he was nice enough to take me on as a patient. I appreciated that. So
yeah,
I'm now with him, and he's treated me the right way, and he's given me the right advice. And of course, I've done my own research, and I believe in him, and that's very important. So
that is very important.
Let me give you a little anecdotal things. Now, this is the negative side of doctors. And I've seen a lot of that too. So I had a radiation oncologist, and she suggested that first thing I did was have a, I'm not going to make this long. It's just, I want to just point out the thing about doctors, and then I'll get to the CRPS issues, which is right after that. So I had a biopsy for the prostate, and typically they jab you, and they put in 8 to 12 areas where they take out tissue samples. Mm-hmm. Well, in my case, I didn't know about it. They only did 6. Now, if you're only doing 6 instead of 8 to 12, then you have less of a chance of finding where the cancer is, right? Because you don't. And then as I read and as I did my own research, because I don't believe in, after I had my fiasco with my foot surgeries, I did my own research and found that out. And then I also found out that a targeted MRI is a much better indication of where the cancer is than a biopsy is. It's much more accurate. It gives a much higher percentage of finding it in the right place.
Yeah.
So then I got a targeted MRI. And then after reading enough about prostate cancer, I decided that I was not going to go ahead with the radiation. Because for a number of reasons, it destroys your sexual function. It's going to hurt my CRPS more. There's no question about that. And there's no guarantee that the contrary to what they say in the research, it's when you got the cancer that determines whether the radiation is going to work as much as it is, you know, when you get it.
Yeah.
So I decided against it. And when I told the radiation oncologist that I was not going to get it for the reasons that I stated, because I had already, you know, scheduled it, she was very upset with me. She was angry at me. And that pissed me off, to say the least. Okay.
Yeah.
And let me just tell you, then I'm done with this. Her parting shot to me was, you know, you have a lot more cancer in there than what the MRI is showing. Now, I couldn't imagine a doctor saying that to me. And all it was spite. And she was angry because she wasn't going to ring the cash register. So now I would have been happy to strangle her, but that probably wouldn't have been a good idea. So. All right. So that's just one doctor. I got so many more, but I'm going to go into the CRPS because that's what everybody is listening here for the most part. Okay. I had 9 years ago, I was an athlete. I had a lot of injuries. I broke my leg really bad playing football. And it was very traumatic. I had varicose vein surgery, and that led because of blood clots that I had from the football injury. And over time, I walked funny, and then I ended up with a huge bunion, of all things, in my left foot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I scheduled a bunionectomy, and this was when I trusted doctors. This was 9 years ago, and I didn't do my own research. And one thing about surgery, especially in your foot, is that it's easy to develop CRPS in your foot because there's not a lot of fat tissue there. There's not a lot of skin that separates it from the bone. And it's a wonderful breeding ground. And there's a lot of nerve endings and nerves that go around your foot issue. So it's not likely to happen with surgery, but it's certainly a good possibility that you can get CRPS from foot surgery.
Mm.
And the other thing about foot surgery is it rarely works very well. And I know that from doing research, and I know that from the shoulder surgery I got from being a pitcher in baseball. I had rotator cuff surgery twice. That was one of the two surgeries out of 15 that really worked. And I asked the doctor who did the rotator cuff surgery, man, why don't you do foot surgery?
Richard, you're frozen.
Hello?
Okay, you coming back?
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, there you are.
Okay.
Yeah, you froze on me.
Okay. I wish I could freeze my leg, actually, but
yeah.
So if you're getting foot surgery, do your own research. Read your studies yourself. Find out what it is you're doing to yourself. Find out what nerves can be damaged. Make sure you get a ketamine drip in your anesthetic when you get surgery. It lessens the post-surgical pain by 30%, and it reduces the chance of getting CRPS by 40%. And that's from an NIH study that my spine surgeon didn't want to hear about, by the way. Okay.
Huh.
So I'm going back to my surgery now. I had a bunionectomy. It was wrong from the first minute. My foot hurt like hell. It was very red and hurt, and I knew there was something wrong with it. And the surgeon said to me, there's nothing wrong with your foot. Pretty typical.
Mm.
Then the head nurse came up to me while the surgeon wasn't in the room, and she says, there's something wrong with your foot. You need to go get it checked out.
Oh.
And then I looked at her and I said, why don't you tell the doctor that? And she said, well, I don't want to lose my job.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, all I could think of is, if that's the person I'm working for, I'm getting another job.
Yes.
So anyway, so that was my first surgery on my foot. So I didn't do any research yet because I still trusted doctors, and I went to another surgeon. And then I also had screws put in my foot that were supposedly made out of titanium, which is an inert metal that your body is almost never allergic to.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I had continued pain, and it was getting worse, and I had a boot on all the time, and I couldn't exercise. I couldn't do anything. So then I said to the first surgeon, I said, is it possible that my foot is allergic to these screws? And he said, no, absolutely not. They're made out of titanium. And then I started looking into Zimmer and all the companies that make these screws. And I find out that they use base metal to save money on titanium as like an alloy to add to the thing, because it's a lot cheaper to make with lead than it is to make with titanium, of course.
That's terrible.
So, pretty typical. And that's another thing. Never trust corporations when they're doing the study on the thing that you're looking at having done to you. Because it's always going to be fudged in their favor. They're paying for the survey. So, so then I got this metal test, and it was back when they used to put these little pieces of metal on your back, believe it or not, and they'd see how your back would respond to them. So they're kind of worthless. And I asked my shoulder surgeon, I called him up, and he said they now have a blood test for metals to see approved from the FDIC. Blood test, it was a, and then of course, no surprise to me, but it turned out that I was allergic to base metals like lead and any other base metal, and that's what they put.
Yeah.
And analyzed, and that's where we're in the screws. And I'm worse with the fact that I was allergic to the screws.
Yeah.
So the problem with operating on your foot, the more operation you have on your foot in this small space, the better the chance you're going to have more trauma in there. And I kind of thought that, and I said to the surgeon, I said, isn't it bad to keep operating on your foot? Isn't that the problem even better than it was before? And he said, no. It'll be fine. So the next surgery was to remove the screws from my foot. And of course, I got another boot on, and that was even more painful. But I waited for, you know, a couple of weeks, a month. And then it was even more painful because they had more trauma to my foot. And unbeknownst to me, I already had CRPS by that point. My foot was purple and, you know all the things, the allodynia and all the things that people notice when they have CRPS.
Yes.
So now my 100% locked, meaning that I can't walk because my toe doesn't bend at all. So I go to a different surgeon now, and I'm thinking, well, I still haven't been doing my research on what this could possibly be. Now it's 2 years later. So then I get the third surgery is to put an implant, a 2-inch plastic implant in my toe joint, which will make the toe bend somewhat, but raises the angle of the toe and again deforms my foot even more than it already was. So I went along with it, and now of course I could move my toe a little bit and I could walk a little bit, but again it made my foot worse and made the pain even worse, of course, which increased the pain of CRPS. So now it's 3 years later, and now I'm going to more doctors, and you know, somebody, this is a MD surgeon, tells me that I've got fungus. I got toe fungus. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't toe fungus. It was CRPS, which was destroying my toes, of course. And then another one said this, and another one said that, and another one said this, and now it's 3.5 years later, and I went, here's the best thing to do to find a good doctor. The best thing to do. Go to a physical therapist that's seen a lot of injuries where people have come to them because of surgery and things that didn't go right, that are competent, that you feel are good at what they do, and ask them who the good and bad doctors are. Because they know, they see their handiwork. So now, Lori and I go to Florida every year, and we went to Florida, and I went to see a highly rated physical therapist that a doctor that I trusted told me about. It was someone that I was considering ketamine infusions for. And I went to see her. She's 63 years old. Her name was Dr. Green. And she looked at my foot and she said, there's something wrong with your foot. I said, here are the people to go to. And she gave me a list of three doctors that are, and here are the ones to avoid. So I started looking them off, and now it's getting close to We've been in Florida for a couple months. It's getting close to 4 years now that I've had this.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to do my own research on CRPS and whatever I have. And I'm going to these doctors and I'm doing my own research on the internet. And I saw the changes in my toenails and I felt the pain and the color changes and the coldness, the freezing to the burning pain. And guess what? I self-diagnosed my own disease after seeing at least 10 doctors.
Yeah.
So then I went to the other two doctors that she suggested. One of them said, make your leg worse. And then the other one was an Army doctor. It was a trauma doctor at Walter Reed Hospital. And he looked at my foot for 10 seconds and said it was the worst case of CRPS he ever saw.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that crazy? And
now it's 10 times worse than it was then.
Yeah.
So don't count on people that don't care about your body because you know a lot more about how you feel than they do. Do not take their word for it. Get a second and third opinion.
Yeah.
Another way of finding a good doctor is A, get lucky and find a good doctor and ask that doctor who they would go see.
Mm-hmm.
Or get a physical therapist, like I said, that you trust and ask them who have seen botches up the yin yang and have seen good doctors and ask them who they would go see.
Yeah.
And that's what I recommend about finding a good doctor. And I've seen so many bad doctors and doctors that don't care. And the one thing I can tell you is if you go into a doctor's appointment and you don't like what you hear, you don't think they're any good, and you think that they're gaslighting you, if you know what that means, mm-hmm. they're lying to you, you think they're doing that or they're dissing you and you don't think they're important and you don't matter, leave. Just leave. Don't listen to them anymore. Just walk out. And you don't have to say any bad words to them like I might. But you can just leave. And I'll give you an example. I went to see a foot surgeon. And he asked me my medical history. And I told him that I had blood clots in my legs. Big ones. Bad ones. From a football injury I had. And he looked at me and he said, there's no way you had blood clots. Who diagnosed your blood clots? And I said, my uncle, who was one of the foremost heart surgeons in Chicago at the time. And I said, I took Coumadin for 6 months for it. I was laid up for 3 weeks for it. I had a knot the size of a baseball in the side of my leg. And he's telling me that I didn't have a blood clot.
Oh my gosh.
He said that to me, I said, see you later, doc.
Oh my goodness.
So,
I mean, that's dangerous.
Yeah, and I got, yeah, but I knew that it was, you know, I knew.
Yeah.
I knew that I had it and I was worried about more surgery because of that. But anyways, the whole point of this is, what is my suggestion here? Make sure you find a good doctor, and that's much easier said than done, particularly with CRPS. And I can tell you, in Indiana, if you're looking for bad CRPS doctors, they got a lot of them. and they don't really have a lot of them, but I know, I went in to see one of them, and she asked me, have you done physical therapy for your leg? And I said, of course I have. And I said, now it's self-directed because I've been an athlete my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done lots of exercises. And I said, I do my own protocol for exercise.
Yeah.
And she said to me, well, what if you saw a cardiologist and you had a heart condition? Would you go home and do a procedure on yourself?
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute. Are you trying to analogize a heart condition with exercise for my body?
Yeah.
And I said, see you later, doc. I know more about this than you do. And then she said, yeah, please leave right away. And I said to her, I had my one parting shot to her. I said, how does it feel to have a business model where desperation is your 100% desperation? You know, a pain doctor's business model is desperation.
Yeah.
And anybody that has heavy duty pain will do anything to get rid of it.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
And one other thing, the actual approval rating of a pain doctor is somewhere in the area of 20%. Now, I was a baseball player and I had played baseball in college. If I hit 200, I would have been off the team pretty quick.
Okay? Yeah.
So that's my message. Find a good doctor. Find one that you think is a good doctor and ask them. Ask the head of some department of a university that does a lot of research into what you have and ask somebody there that they think is good at what they do.
Oh, and yes, definitely.
And even then, that won't guarantee it, but at least you'll have a chance of finding some way. Do your own research so you think you know what the right protocol is. And I did a ketamine infusion for my leg, and it didn't help. It didn't help the pain. It did remove some of my anxiety. But then I started doing my more research on ketamine infusions and found a person that does the protocol that I'm looking for, which is 4 days on with an increasing dosage, a starting dosage and an increasing dosage, and then a couple of days off, and another 4 days, and a couple of days off, and another 4 days later as the pain comes back, which it always will.
Yes.
So I'm looking for somebody that does that protocol, and that's, according to the Harvard research study, that's the best protocol for ketamine infusion.
Yes.
I'm looking at my notes here. Excuse me. Oh, one other issue. I want to talk now about the statute of limitations for medical malpractice. And I haven't mentioned that, have I? I don't remember.
No.
Okay. In Indiana, it's the worst for the statute of limitations. It's 2 years after the incident or the disease has manifested itself. That doesn't mean when it's diagnosed. It means when it manifests itself. My disease was manifested itself after the first surgery yet, but it wasn't diagnosed until 4 years later.
Yeah.
So the statute of limitations is 2 years in Indiana because the governor of Indiana was a doctor and he rammed this through the legislature so that now I had no cause of action. And I am a lawyer. I had no cause of action against anybody. And if I wanted to bring a cause of action against the first two surgeons, I would need it to pay for it myself.
Yes.
And anybody would know how expensive with the discovery procedure and all the rest that would be.
Oh, yeah.
So compare that to California and New York, where the statute of limitations is 3 years, but more importantly, you have 1 year from when the disease actually manifests itself. So that's a huge difference. So all I had to do was, once it manifested itself, you know, once it was diagnosed, not manifested itself. So if you have 1 year for when the disease or incident is diagnosed, so that 4 years after I knew what I had, I still had a 1 year window for a cause of action. So think about that. Make sure you look up what the law is in the statute of limitations in the state that you're in. And if you have to go to another state to have surgery, that may not be a bad idea. Because trust me, surgeons make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, it's not their fault, it's your fault.
Oh, that's what they say.
Oh, that's what they've said to me many times. I didn't follow their protocol and all the rest, which is total bullshit, because nobody is more disciplined than I am.
Yes. So, well, that's what my daughter even told that to one doctor, because he said that you know, I just don't understand pain and healing, you know, because I'm just a woman. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. My daughter got so mad because she was with me and she let him have it. That, you know, that's the strongest woman I know, my mom. You know, she just...
And you are. I know that for a fact. I know you very well. We correspond.
Mm-hmm. When... We do. We do. I mean, there's just...
If I was in the room with that guy when he said that to you, or if my wife was... He said that to him, which I know my wife is very strong too. I would have tried to strangle the guy for sure. So
yeah.
I don't have the filter that I used to have anymore. I really don't care. I don't care about hurting doctors' feelings. I don't care one bit about it because they generally really don't have your best interests at heart. They really don't.
They don't. I'm not like saying you said, all of them it's about don't. The cash register.
Yep.
It definitely is. So, I went and saw a doctor the other day, and that's what she did not. I went there for a reason. She didn't even, you know, handle what I went there for. Instead, she wanted to do something else. And it's like, this isn't what I came for. And plus, my CRPS, my pain, I have a pain doctor. We're doing a regimen. You know, we're putting things together. There's no reason for me to start over with you, you know? No, I've been doing this since 2015. I don't need a nope.
You know, Melissa, please explain what you were going there for, and I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to this.
Yeah, because you know, CRPS, you know, it can affect your hair and your nails. Well, it has definitely affected my nails, especially on my toes. My left foot is like really, really bad. And so the nurse at, you know, with my pain specialist, he, you know, she recommend, hey, why don't you go see her? Because, you know, she has a laser and she can, you know, laser down your toenails and maybe they'll come in, you know, healthier than what they are right now. So I went there for that. And what she did totally took the, you know, appointment and took it to another direction of my CRPS. And I was like, well, I'm not here for that. I'm just here for my toenails. You know, the nurse practitioner that, you know, works and she yes. knows her and said, you know, I come here and I can do this. And she goes, well, how about, have you tried this? Have you tried this? You know, talking about, you know, why aren't you on plain steroids or why haven't you tried, you know, cortisone shot right in the spot where I have, you know, where CRPS started? Or, I mean, you're not going to put a shot in my foot. You're not even going to touch my foot. You know, it's like she's, and then she did bring up a lot of things that I've already done. What about injections? But why are you asking me about all this when I'm not here for that? I'm here for my toenails and see if the laser will work with me. And that was it. That's what I was there for. So I'm not going back. Because
no,
he wasn't no, listening to me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just saying. Yeah, she wasn't listening.
No, and
that
is the easiest thing for them to do. B is what they know the best. And C, I hate to say this, but also what the best profit margin is in that. And mm-hmm. I've been in business my whole life, and I know that, you know, every businessman tries to promote the thing that he has the biggest, he or she has the biggest profit margin in.
Yep.
And I can say honestly that there's more accountability. And what I did after I became a lawyer and an accountant, which I didn't want to be, I owned a trading company. I started being a trader on the Chicago Board of Trade and the Chicago Options Exchange. And there was 50 times the accountability there, even though it's the most competitive place. Because if you lie about what you do, nobody will trade with you after that, and you're out.
Yeah.
It isn't about morality or anything like that. There's checks and balances, because if you lie, you're going to get caught in it, and nobody's going to trade with you again. That's the reason. So, and then my wife and I used to sell higher-end collectibles. I had a website, and I bought them through there. And there was tremendous accountability on that, because if you didn't deliver what you said was right, people would do reviews. And if they were bad, you didn't get customers after that.
Exactly.
So again, doctors don't have that accountability. Reviews don't mean anything in that respect. So, and I wanted to mention about toenails. My the CRPS is spread to my right foot, and the part that hurts the most is where my toenails are, and they're what called concave toenails, where they bend in very badly. So the toenails themselves, and I'm sure other people have this too, it puts tremendous pressure on where the nerve endings are, and that spreads the CRPS, because once your leg starts hurting, it tends to spread to other. And as people know, wherever the weakness in your body is, and I've had shoulder surgery and spine surgery, lumbar and thoracic, it's going to attack the places in your body that have the most weakness.
Same.
And deep breathing, I do vagus nerve exercises, which I think help. And if you DM me on Backyard Birder, I will give you my protocol for supplements and exercise and sleeping and mental health.
Yeah. Which,
yes, please mention that, Melissa. I know you can talk about it also.
Mental health is, I mean, my mental health went, down, like in a very, very dark space, because it took 2.5 years for them to figure out what was going on with me. And it was a physical therapist that figured it out and then let the doctor know, because since she couldn't officially diagnose me. And, but the thing is I'm thankful, for the people around me, of course, because they helped me out. But if it wasn't for my dogs, I mean, I have 5 of them, which everybody should know if they listen. I mean, and then I don't know where I'd be, because I was home alone so much because of the fact that I couldn't go anywhere. I was basically bedridden for those 2.5 years. And
patient is so brutal. I'm sure anybody out there understands that.
Oh, yes.
It destroys your mind. It really does.
It does. Because, I mean, especially going to doctors and, they're not listening, and they just think, oh, well, you're fine. You just have to heal. Oh, well, let's have another surgery, or, and you're supposed to believe in them, and that's what I did. I believed in them. That doctor was, refer me to this doctor. So I figured, hey, it must be a good doctor. That's what I'm assuming. That's another good doctor. But the doctors I was seeing weren't. I found out later, that I started figuring it out. Like at first, even like you said, at first you trusted them, you believed in them. But then it was like, oh, you know what? No, they're not at my best interest. I'm falling deeper and deeper. And luckily my dogs kept me going to get my mental state out of that dark, deep hole, because dogs, you have to get up and you have to keep going. They're gonna want to go outside. They got to be fed and watered, and they need their exercise. And so
and it affects your whole life, everybody around you, and it affects your relationship with your family and your friends, because and some rightfully so in some respects, because you were an athlete, I was an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
I can't play basketball with my friends anymore. I can't play tennis with my friends anymore. And they do call me, you know, my friends do all the time, and I appreciate that. And I know they care about me, but they can't, as you well know, if you don't have this, you don't know what you're living through. Nobody can understand it. Debilitating in mind and body. That
it is.
And you just want to find a doctor that at least is empathetic to what you're feeling. Just somebody that'll say, you know, I'm going to look into this. I'm going to spend a little extra time trying to figure out what's wrong with you. Maybe I can talk to another doctor I know. You never get that. Never.
No. You have to.
And that's why I say they're overpaid. Doctors are overpaid. I don't care what anybody says. And if they're seeing too many patients, there needs to be more doctors. More doctors.
Yes. Okay?
That's not our fault.
No. Oh, no. And like you said, the sympathy part, the, you know, the listening to us, they really should take a class on that. I mean, because I know some doctors just do not have that, you know, bedside manner kind of thing where, you know, you don't have to be like extra sweet to me, but I want you to tell me the truth. Hey, I'm not really a specialist for this. Let me refer you to somebody else. I hear what you're saying. I'll put it in the notes so we can send it over to them and see if they can help you. You know?
Yes.
That would be amazing. I mean, so amazing.
It's just, I've gotten so much. The spine doctor that did my spine, and I have nothing against his ability level. It's tremendous. I know it is. Because he was one of the few people that would even operate on me because my body was getting to be bent in a 90-degree angle. So I didn't doubt his ability level or anything like that. But what really irked me about him was that thing that I told him beforehand about the ketamine infusions. He just got his ruffles feathered because, you know, he knows more about surgery, and no, I can't do back surgery. I admit it. I can't.
Yeah.
But the other thing that irritated me, as a follow-up, every 3 months to my surgery, and I applauded him for this, I would get a call from a researcher that worked for him that would ask me, how's your range of motion? How's your pain level? How's your ability to move? Can you go to the bathroom? Can you get in bed? Can you bend over? Can you do any light exercises? And this, every 3 months, up to 2 years, I would hear from him, right? Mm. So I said to him one time, I said, it's great that you're doing surgery, but why can't you publish that for other patients to see so they know what they're getting in for?
Yeah.
Why can't, in business, or in, a couple of my kids are engineers, okay? And I have like an engineering type mind. And when I hit a business and something didn't go right, I would look into it and I would say, why did this go wrong? Why did I lose money on this? Why was the problem not solved? Why don't doctors do that? They do not. They use anecdotal evidence instead of taking research on what they've done and then comparing it and publishing it so people that are going to get spine surgery or foot surgery know, or at least not know, but have a better concept of whether they're going to have a success out of it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's one of the major failings of medicine. I just can't believe they don't have better quality control after the fact. Because every business that does, that builds machines, and there's a lot at stake for your body and the pain in your body and your ability to move than whether I give a shit about whether my lawnmower works, you know? So that's my last gripe. And I have a lot more to say, but I think maybe, you know, if you think, if, you have plenty of knowledge on this too. And what else? I know you're tired, but what else do you have to add? I know you have lots of things to add. But what?
I mean, you did. I mean, you really touched a lot of things that, you know, people can truly think about. You know what I mean? Like, this is an episode that I could see people having to, like, rewind to hear you again and be like, wait a minute, is that really what he said? You know, and research themselves about things that needs to be done, because you have to research. If you don't, you're going to be, you know, in a pickle kind of situation. You know, like they have.
Yeah,
that
you're
saying.
Not necessarily going to get better, but if you don't do it, mm-hmm. you are going to get better. That's you're going to get worse.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. You need to know what it is that's attacking you. You need to understand what is happening to your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a pneumothorax, that's a hole I have in my lung. Now, that can be a really bad thing. And when I went to the emergency room a couple of days ago for it, I was plenty worried, because I know what the, if I have a big hole in my lung, I know what's going to happen to me, and I got to make a decision if I really want to do that. But at least I know what's going to happen. Okay. So, and that's another thing. Please listen to this podcast a couple of times. DM either me or Melissa. We both have a lot of suffering and a lot of experience mm-hmm. in dealing with both cancer and CRPS.
Definitely.
That we know what can happen to you. So at least, you know, I think we can help you. And all I try to do, and all Melissa tries to do with her Instagram, is to help people. That's all we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to not suffer like we are. That's all we're doing. There's no ego involved in this. All it is we want people to feel better, to get better.
Definitely. Because we do.
And I've raised money through corporate donations, and it's not easy to do because you got to beat on them real hard.
Yes.
And I have a little thing on each one of my posts, but that's not how I really raise money. And but if you've got questions about sleep or supplements or mental health, that's another thing. I have a psychiatrist that is very well versed in CRPS. She's mm-hmm. had four patients over the years that have actually died from it over time because they were old.
Yeah.
And I'm one of the oldest people that have it. And she understands it. And it's helped me sleep tremendously because she understands
it. That's awesome.
And you need to sleep. If you don't sleep, mm-hmm. you're going to die.
Yep.
You need to sleep. That's the, in my estimation, it's the most important thing in having CRPS.
Yes. Yes. Because I was not getting any sleep.
Please DM us. Please.
It was a difference. Yeah. Yeah. Ask questions. Reach out. Or even if you don't reach out to us, ask questions with your doctors, whoever you see, or even with your family, friends. Just talk. That's the biggest thing, and make sure that they are listening to you. Because even if you're not able to, you know, research or anything like that, someone else can do it for you, hopefully.
Yeah,
you know?
there's another person, Justine Feitelson, who's on Instagram. She's very smart and very knowledgeable about movement of your body. She's a very mm-hmm. positive influence. She wants to help people. That's her motivation to, believe me. And there's others that escape me at the moment, but I'd be happy to. There's a 27-year-old woman. Her name is Sylvie Tressing. And she suffers from a lot of issues other than CRPS. And she was a medical researcher, and she's got a wonderful attitude. And right now she's really hurting bad. It would be nice just to give her a nice thought. And mm-hmm. when she's able, if you ask her some questions, she'll be happy to answer with what she knows about CRPS, which is plenty, by the way. And there's others too, which I'd be happy to name if you DM me. If you don't want to talk to a 70-year-old man, I can understand it. You'd rather talk to a 40-year-old woman, since women get this a lot more than men do. I can understand. I have a lot of daughters, and I have a high regard for women, a very, very high regard. My mother was a powerful person. My wife is a powerful person, and I respect women tremendously. So, and that's not bullshit. Okay.
So, I know Richard is a great guy, y'all. He really is.
And so are, and you. So are you a great person? A very kind and thoughtful and person with a great attitude. And it's hard to have a great attitude with this. Very hard.
It is. It's something that I still work on every day, because there is days that I'm just like ready to just give up, but I keep going. I do. I keep going. Because I have to get up and take my dogs out.
Absolutely. And I have a new puppy too, and I love dogs.
Oh, he's so cute. Oh, your puppy is so cute.
You know, the problem is when you have this, it's hard to take care of a dog. That's what's hard.
It is.
And they're like your children, and I have a lot of children, so I get it. And luckily, I got Lori to, you know, help take care of me and help take care of the dog. She loves to run and she loves to play, and I can't do that. Yeah. So it's tough. But,
yeah.
But anyways, I appreciate you. I appreciate what you're trying to accomplish and what you go through on a daily basis. And I've said it before, there's a lot of heroes that have CRPS, and you're one of them. They're not actors. They're not athletes. They're people like you. And that's and I mean that too.
That's so sweet.
it's true. It's not bullshit. Aww. So
amazing.
Well, I have my moments. Believe me, I drive my poor wife crazy, and it's,
don't we all?
Yeah, it's tough on them, and the caregivers, as everybody knows, it's, you know, kudos to them, because they got a tough road too.
They do. They take on a lot, and it's a lot. So I'm very thankful for my husband, my mom. I mean, just I don't know where I'd be without them.
Thankful for my wife, for you.
Yeah. Yep. Oh yeah, your beautiful wife. He has a beautiful wife, y'all.
Yeah, she is. She, you know, she had a tough childhood. I'm not going to go into what happened to her, but
yeah.
She could have easily gone in a way that would have destroyed her and not been the person she is. But she actually went in another way, and she's positive 90% of the time. Nobody's positive all the time, but she's very positive, and considering what she lived through, that's pretty impressive. So
that's amazing. All these amazing stories, I tell you. But we can definitely talk again, Richard. I know you still have a lot more to say, and I mean, I'm just thankful for what you brought to our attention today. And research, use your voice, and
even if it's not CRPS.
Yeah,
anything you have that's bothering you, do the research.
Anything. Because you know your body. You know, and everybody is just human here. Same with the doctors. They're human. They're going to make mistakes no matter what they say. And if you think something else is going on, that's when you say, okay, I'm done with you. Let's go to a next person.
Yep.
And you can
absolutely
do that.
Keep trying to find a good one, and then get a second opinion on a good one.
Yep.
And sometimes it takes your whole, it's like a job for you, but you know, too bad. You can't think of a better job than trying to heal yourself. It's not easy, but
it's not easy,
but it's really important. Don't rely on other people when you're capable of doing something for yourself. That's all I can say.
Exactly. You need to take care of yourself. It's very important. Well, I want to say thank you, Richard.
Okay, thanks, Melissa. You know, we'll talk again many times, on a personal basis. And
you're
hope your dogs
friend.
Are having a good day too, and you have some fun with them. Okay?
Oh yeah, they're outside right now. I'm outside.
And so, me too.
Yep, they're running around, and enjoying the sun and the grass.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, my friend. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
All right, y'all. I'll be talking to you soon, and y'all have a beautiful day, and hope you have lots of spoons. And till next time.